Good evening, everybody. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from Perry Avenue Bar and Grill here in beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. Weather's a little tough out there today. We were going to have a special guest in the studio, the great Osama Abdullah, who's going to sit in with us. But I don't know. I guess that $400,000 Land Rover he has isn't that four-wheel drive. He couldn't make it over. But so I'm flying solo. Neil's down in South Carolina for the holidays, visiting family. He's kind of got like a holiday schedule like Francesca or like Howard Stern. Like he just gets December off. He don't need to be in. You know, when you get a contract like Neil, you get a lot of high demand. Tony D's he's running the boards. He'll be chiming in a little bit later on with some say what. But
am I here? Can you hear me?
Who's this? Tony D, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Nice. All right. Remote, little satellite office.
So Tony D's at the Cable Rated Studios. I know it's in town, apparently, but he's on board with us. He'll be helping us out with the boards and chiming in whenever he's fit, obviously. It's been a great year. We last show of the year here in 2012. It's been a big year for the Tri-State Sports Guys. We got a special thanks to NDB Media. We joined their team in the spring, and it's been great. We've expanded a lot since then. Neil Lynch has joined the team. We got a special thanks to Roger Noriega over there. NDB does a great job, and I actually heard a stat. In 2012, they had 700,000 downloads through NDB. I'm assuming more than half of that was Tri-State Sports Guys related, but I don't know the exact numbers, but very excited for 2013. Hopefully a lot of big things coming out of the Tri-State Sports Guys. We got a trivia tonight in preparation of the big game Giants against the Eagles. Must win for the Giants there. Possibly Andy Reid's last game as a head coach over in Philly. We got a couple people calling in. We're going to be giving away a pullover, Eagles pullover jacket donated to us by 99 Bottles. They've been a great sponsor to the show. So you got to check them out. And we'll be giving them plugs throughout the night. But you can check out their website, www.99. And that's spell out the word 90, N-I-N-E-T-Y, and the number 9. bottles.com. You can check them out. I know we got a lot of listeners that aren't from the area, but they do deliver. Your state is one of the states that allows liquor delivery, so just check it out. They list the sites, the states that don't they can't deliver to, but check them out. Great people, and it'll be exciting to go through our Philadelphia Eagles trivia a little bit later on. But we got to start out, and I will have to mention, sitting in studio, we are in front of a live audience here. We've got legendary local coach, former MSG Coach of the Year, Sean Ireland, with us in studio. Big Giants fan. He's going to love how we open this show with the Giants talk. Neil and I went back and forth a little bit about what we were going to open with. Neil, unfortunately, isn't going to be able to call in, so I'm going to be flying solo there. But I do want to reference Neil's article. He wrote a great article for our site. We really broke down the Giants' struggles and where the blame could lay and different things that they could do moving forward. And I really thought, he broke down every one of Eli Manning's starts this year and the contrast between their wins and their losses. You know, it's basically what we've been saying on the show for 2 years now. They go as he goes, and in their losses, he's got more picks than touchdowns. He just hasn't been there. You got to start to wonder where the blame lies. And I know a lot of it has to do with injuries. You can't, discount the injuries that they've had, but a lot of teams have injuries. So, and they had a lot of injuries last year and they were able to overcome it. So, I'm not going to say it's just that. Is it that their defensive line got old overnight and all of a sudden, they just can't produce the kind of pass rush that they're used to? I don't know. I mean, the idea early on was that, these offenses were just catering their schemes to try to counteract the pass rush. As the season's going on, eventually Perry Fuel and these defensive linemen had to figure a way to get through that, and they clearly haven't been able to. They have not been generating the pass rush that we've seen from them over the last 5 years, and that's a big problem. But let's just go over quickly a little recap of last week's game. And, Neil broke down the game before I called in last week. You know, he's a little, you know, a lot of the consensus seems to be that you know, the Giants were going to win this game. I mean, I know they were favored, I think, by 3 points, even though they were on the road. But, you know, the Ravens had looked awful over the last few weeks. And, you know, the one comment I made, I said, look, the Ravens are a different team at home. Joe Flacco's a different quarterback at home. And I know they had just lost a week previously, but I said, you know, when's the last time the Ravens have lost two in a row at home? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure it's several years ago. And so I thought it was a very tough spot for the Giants. They're going down to Baltimore in a game that not necessarily the Ravens have to win because they already were in, but they needed it to lock up the division, get that home field game in the first round. And really, from just the onset, the Ravens just beat them up. You know, Ray Rice, who had a down year, ran the ball well. Joe Flacco, I mean, it was just the consistent wherever they, it was like their strategy was find out where Corey Webster is and throw it to his side all day. And there were times where he was in position to make a play on the ball and just couldn't make a play on the ball. It wasn't like he was just consistently getting torched, although at times he was torched. It was just, I mean, Flacco played great, and he just was not reacting to the ball once it was in flight. And yeah, I mean, it was like even, you know, every play they were just throwing at him, regardless of which receiver was on his side. It just seems to be, let's just throw it up to him. Then you got Dennis Pitta, who we call him P. Hitta, for out of respect to our boy Paco Fabian, longtime friend of the show. His nickname is P. Hitta. Had another decent day. I mean, that guy's a – you know, a guy who I only followed because his name is Dennis Pitta and Papa's name is Dennis. And so we follow him just as like a joke. But that guy's an emerging stud, I think, at the tight end position. He makes some plays. He had a big play downfield. And so, you know, you look at that game coming off the embarrassing loss that they had against Atlanta. And you say, man, you know, I know they had a tough schedule here towards the end, but – man, no, I don't think anybody saw the kind of beatdowns coming that they got in those last 2 weeks. And I got to give my calls a lot of credit because after 10 weeks, I said, you know, these Giants fans are panicking. There's no way they're going to lose this division because there's no other team in the East that's going to catch them. Who's going to catch them? The Cowboys? The Cowboys can't win a big game. They always choke. They're not going to come up. And he said at the time the Redskins were 4-6. Just a week removed of Shanahan saying basically they needed to reevaluate their roster. And he says, you know who I'm most worried about is the Redskins. I'm telling you right. And at the time, I mean, the Eagles were 4-6 or whatever they were. So the Eagles were just in the hit. And I said, are you kidding? I laughed out loud at him. I said, the Redskins? I said, the Redskins last week, they're 3-6. They don't look like they, you know, they look like a team being led by a rookie quarterback. There's no way the Redskins are going to go on a kind of run that they're going to need to go on and get the kind of losses out of the Giants that they're going to need to get back in the tunnel. I said, you're crazy. Sure enough, Redskins have not lost since then. Neil's the genius. They're in position, obviously, to win the division with a win this week. But even if they lose, they got options to get in as a wild card. It just kudos to Neil for predicting that. I just didn't see it. I thought that I still don't believe in their defense. They don't get any kind of pass rush. But they seem to come up with stops when they need to. I think Pierre Garçon coming back has been huge for them. He's been great. And, you know, they got RG3. You know, it's really been an amazing run and obviously a huge game to watch this weekend. And it'll be very exciting. But back to the Giants, you know, to kind of point the blame, and I'll direct you to our website, tristatesportsguys.com, to check out Neil's article. But, you know, he points to a couple things. He points to the linebacker position, specifically the Mike spot, where Chase Blackburn has been. And I've said it several times this year. He's my favorite Giant guy. To me, always seems to come up with plays that Neil thinks they might need to upgrade there. You know, he mentions the defensive line, and he mentions Eli Manning. Not that you're going to upgrade. I mean, Eli Manning's your quarterback for as long as he wants to be the quarterback for the Giants. He's earned that, and he's still a very good quarterback. But the idea around the sports world that what's wrong with Eli Manning, to me, I think is misguided. You look at his stats this year, they're in line with every other season he's ever had other than last year. And I said that a few weeks ago. I said, you know, Eli Manning's a very good quarterback who had a phenomenal season last year. You've seen that plenty of times throughout the course of NFL history. You'll see a good quarterback have a great year. I mean, you've seen Philip Rivers put together phenomenally. As you look at Stafford's numbers last year, I mean, you know, I think that last he was not as good as he looked last year. I think that you look at his quarterback rating for his career; it's in the mid 80s. Completion percentage is right around 59-61%. I don't know; I don't have the numbers in front of me, but somewhere around there. He's always been high with picks, but he gets big yardage. He's a gunslinger, and he doesn't. I think because of his personality, he doesn't come across as a gunslinger. He's kind of a dope type guy, like, you know, in interviews and the facial expressions. But he really is. He's in the same ilk as, like, a Brett Favre, to be honest with you, with the, you know, the chances he takes. And when he's hot, he's unstoppable. And when he's not, he's very mediocre. And I think that what you've seen over the course of the season is a lot of that. And, you know, a lot of people want to blame the play calling. They want to blame the injuries to, obviously, to Hakeem Nicks, who's held catchless last week. And that's all fine and good, but, you know, this was the same guy who last season everybody says he makes everyone around him better. And, they, you know, they point to the tight ends he's worked with and made them better. They gave him all the credit for Victor Cruz. They gave, you know, credit for making all these people around him better. Well, you know, I think, and not that he's just strictly a product of the parts around him or the system, but, you know, I said it before the season, you stick him with the Jets and the weapons that the Jets have, and the offensive line that the Jets have, and the offensive coordinator, the Jets aren't going out and making the playoffs this year with Eli Manning. I think, you know, there's maybe four or five quarterbacks in the league that could take the Jets, and I don't think he's that kind of guy. And so I think that what you see is what Eli Manning really is, and it's just the story of his career. I don't know why everybody's so wondering if there's an injury, this and that. The guy's going to, you know, he's going to throw for a decent amount of yards. He's going to throw 25 or so amount of touchdowns. And that's been his standard season. And there's been games where you look at the, the Bucs game, Sean, we threw for 500 yards? Which is the Brown Bucs we threw for 500 yards. You know, you look at that huge play made against the Skins in that first game. We throw the 80-yard touchdown to Victor Cruz there and the big plays there, and you say, well, that's Eli Manning, but then you also see the games where he's thrown up an egg, and you also have seen the defense, for as maligned as they are, as everybody wants to bash him, and they single-handedly won that game against the Niners, and the Niners' offense is not it's better than it was last year, but it wasn't Eli Manning that won that game, it was the Giants' defense that put him in position to get all those points. And if you remember, the Giants had to settle for a lot of field goals in that game. So I don't know. I mean, Sean, am I way off base with this?
As a huge Eli supporter, no, you're not. I think the biggest problem they have is, believe it or not, is their defense. I think their defense this year is horrible, and I don't think Parafuel even attempts to make an adjustment during the game. It's just, if we get to the quarterback, great. If we don't, oh well. Without making zero adjustments at all, he just hopes on the front four, and this year they really have not been doing much. But
yeah, I mean, last week they looked at the, from what I saw, at times they went to a 3-4, which was weird. But I agree with you, I agree with you with Parafuel, and I know there are a lot of people, including Neil Lynch at times, who want to complain about Kevin Gilbride. To me, if you're a Giants fan and you want to give Eli Manning the ultimate pass forever and ever, you got to give this guy the pass forever. I don't know how you could nitpick play calls here and there, and there's times you're like, why is he running the ball here? Why is he passing in this situation? But Kevin Gilbride has put together one of the more dynamic offensive plans to throw the ball down the field. It's a new age type play. I mean, do you give that guy a pass, or am I wrong with that? I mean, I'm not a Giants fan.
No, Kevin Gilbride's all right. The thing that I'm not saying I'm a huge NFL guru, 99% of the time, they give two plays in there, and then Eli can pick one of those two, and then on top of that, audible out of it. So it's not like high school where, hey, you got to run this play because this is the play that's called in. So a lot of the plays actually goes on Eli, but obviously Gilbride sends them in. The thing that frustrates me the most, if I was a defensive coordinator against the Giants and it was first and goal inside the two, I'd run a prevent defense. They never run the ball inside the 5-yard line. They run every time. They put in your dime package, throw in nine cornerbacks out there, rush two because you'll pick or knock the ball. They never run it.
Yeah, they have been their bugaboo all season down with field goals, which is that's not really what you think of a high powered offense.
Right.
Now, one of the things that Neil mentioned in his article was the offensive line. And the offensive line is kind of an enigma because there's times when you've seen them run the ball very well. We've seen Matt Bradshaw go over 100 yards a couple of times. We saw that game when Bradshaw was down and David Wilson, Waterworks had a great game.
And Eli Manning has been sacked less than any other quarterback in the league. So you say, well, they're not that bad, but then there's also games that you saw last week with a maligned Ravens team who does give up a lot of rushing yards this year. They're not the same Ravens that we've grown to know, and they couldn't run the ball at all. I think they ran for like 60 yards.
Right. The other thing you got to – I mean, obviously, sack is a big, big stat. I think a big stat is how many times the quarterback's gotten hit. And I don't know what the numbers are, but it seems like Eli's laying on the ground all the time. Like,
yeah.
All the time. They might not actually be a sack, but he's always getting hit.
He's a tough dude. Right. He never comes out, man. I'll give him credit for that.
That game last year against San Francisco, he gets up, his helmet's on sideways, bleeding from this and that,
yep.
And he's in there the next play. You can say he sucks, but he is.
Oh, I've said he's one of the toughest quarterbacks. He's one of the tougher players in the league. There was a game, a preseason game against the Jets a few years ago. His helmet came off, and he was just bleeding, gushing blood out of his face. In a preseason game, he went back in.
Right.
Sit down, Eli. It's a preseason game, my man.
It's interesting in going over the Giants and what they have in front of them this week, because even like the comments from Tom Coughlin, it seems like he's just like, you know, we got to finish with some pride, those type of comments. But they got a legitimate shot of making the playoffs. It's not even that crazy. It's not even like this is impossible to happen. If you were to put a 14 parlay down with the teams that they need to win, you know, the Giants opened at 9.5. It's come way down. It's down to 7. A 2.5-point swing in a few days is pretty crazy. But it opened at 9.5, down to 7. It's still a 7-point favorite against the 4 or 5-win team. Whatever how many wins they have. But, you know, the Eagles have been bad. You know, they got Chicago is their only game that I'd be really, really worried about because, you know, the Lions have been bad. But there are games when you look at the Bears and you say, this team is not a playoff team. There's times when their offensive line is so bad. There's times when Jay Cutler looks so bad. You know, it seems like they're so reliant on their defense to put not just make plays, but put points on the board that, you know, I'd have a tough time if I just want to gamble on a game, I have no skin in the game, that I'd want to put money on Chicago laying 3. They're going to Detroit. You know, you still got a lot of offensive weapons there. You got a record-breaking wide receiver. Obviously, Stafford's going to throw for 5,000 yards again. They got a good defensive line, so you got to be worried about that if you're a Bears fan. And if you remember, they played on Monday night the first time they played, and it was just a disgusting game that the Bears wound up pulling out, but it was just a really ugly game, and the Lions just they turned the ball over twice inside the red zone. They couldn't put the ball in the end zone. They couldn't even convert on field goals. So I'd be, you know, it wouldn't shock anybody if the Lions go out and beat the Bears this week. Minnesota's playing Green Bay. You know, they're a 3-point underdog there. Green Bay has something to play for. So, you know, it's not like they're just laying over. They got something to play for. And then you get the Skins against the, against the Cowboys. And, you know, I don't think anybody could really sit here and say that the Redskins are a more talented football team on both sides of the ball than the Cowboys are. And you could say all you want about RG3 and how great he is, and he has been great, and for whatever reason. And I don't think he'll ever be able to shake this until he wins a Super Bowl, and I don't think he ever will win a Super Bowl, but it's a shame. I mean, Tony Romo, to me, is still one of the most underrated players. Year in and year out, this guy's got a quarterback rating in the mid-90s. The stigma is he can't win in a big spot. He doesn't come down in the clutch. He's got more fourth-quarter touchdowns than anybody in the league this year. Every week he's leading them on game-winning drives. It's been amazing that people just still, oh, Tony Romo, he stinks. People in Dallas hate him. Dallas fans I know hate him. I sent him over to East Rutherford. We'll take him on the Jets any day of the week. I'll trade everybody to get Tony Romo. So, when you look at the Giants, none of those games that they need to break their way would be a shot. Now, granted, you know, they need them to happen, but I honestly think I'd be worried about them beating the Eagles. As crazy as it sounds, you got Andy Reid possibly his last game. I mean, you don't even say the word possibly anymore. It's going to be his last game as a head coach of the Eagles, clearly the best coach they've ever had. I mean, he's just been amazing, and we're going to get some trivia questions with him related to him a little bit later on, but you got to have Michael Vick playing for an audition because Foles is out. So Michael Vick is starting, knowing it'll be his last game in Philly, and he knows he's got to go out and earn a contract next year. They already beat him once this year. It wouldn't be just outrageous for me. And I, and you can see it by the way that they, I mean, a lot of people are agreeing with me. The 9.5 point spread that opened up to close 2.5 points in 3 days is very strange in a must-win game for the Giants. The fact that it closed that much means that people in Vegas are don't believe in the Giants and are kind of leaning towards the Eagles. And I know the thing is, you know, you bet against what the public does. But, you know, I saw that right away and I said, there's no way I'd be laying 9.5 points if I want to take the Giants. I don't know that, you know, I would put money on the Eagles to win. But I'm telling you, it wouldn't surprise me. And I think this is going to be a battle. And who knows what the weather's going to be like. I've heard it's going to snow again this weekend. How bad that is, I don't know, but it's supposed to snow throughout the day on Saturday, lingering into Sunday. And as far as, you know, the Giants being a Northeast team and you think that, you know, they're used to the snow, they don't play well in December. Their record under Tom Coughlin, second half of the season, during his tenure there, I think I heard it was 29-42. And he's never had a record as a Giant head coach in the first half worse than 5-3. So they just continuously do this. And I know, you know, they went on those two Super Bowl runs and people think like they could just turn on the switch. But in fact, I mean, the norm is for them to have this late season slide. So it would not surprise me. And if the three teams they need to win and they lose, and man, oh man, what would that do? I couldn't even imagine. It really what it got me thinking about is, and I'm working on an article for the site that'll be up tomorrow, but I'll tease it a little bit here. And I might actually wait until it all plays out to see where it goes. But if the Giants, if their collapse completes itself and they don't make the playoffs, if they're being 6-2, being a few games up on everyone else in the division, and getting beat down the stretch to a rookie quarterback, is that a more disappointing season than what the Jets have gone through? And, you know, I'm not going to tell you what my answer is on that, but on the surface, you know, the Jets, really nobody's picking them to go to the playoffs other than Rex Ryan. I didn't see ESPN or Sports Illustrated or anybody really picking the Jets to clearly not win the division, and most places didn't even have making the wild card. Now, the zoo that's been the Jets season is a whole different story, so that might trump everything else. But for the Giants, you know, there were a lot of teams, a lot of places didn't believe in them as a division winner, and I know the Giants got all angry at that and puffed out their chest, and, you know, we don't care what they, you know, let them all talk about the Jets, you know, they're all this and that because they're so buttoned up over there. It's so classy. And so, but a lot of places were picking to make the wild card, and at least, you know, once they were up six, once they started out their season 6-2, you know, nobody was predicting a collapse like this. And, you know, you could point towards their tough schedule down the end here, but, you know, some losses that they had early in the season that they shouldn't have lost to the, you know, you want to win, you can't lose to the Redskins, to be honest with you, you want a division. You got to, you know, you want to talk about a tough schedule. You know, it turned out not to be as tough as it looked at the beginning of the season, and we talked about that. I mean, the game against the Saints, they should have won, and they won. I mean, the Saints are not a good team this year. You know, catching the Ravens when they did, they should have won that game. They were favored in that game. Even down in Atlanta, catching them after a loss, they were only 1 point underdog in that game. So it's not like these were games that it's, like, unfathomable for them to come out and win. So I'm going to work on an article. I don't want to write it until we know, you know, I'm not going to jump the gun and say it was a more disappointing season and have all these things break their way. They beat the Eagles and go to the playoffs, then it becomes a moot point. But it'll be certainly a very, very exciting weekend of football. Obviously, up in the AFC, everything is taken care of with the Bengals win last week, wrapping up those 16. But, you know, there's still some jostling for seeding and buys and all of that. So the games are pretty interesting still up that way. But when you talk about the NFC, there's so many teams still with a shot at this. It's actually, you know, it's rare to see, you know, all the different scenarios and how they could break out. And you look at the, you know, first and foremost, you know, the Dallas-Washington game there. You know, I think if you're a Redskins fan, although you know you can make the playoffs without winning and having a couple things break your way, you know, in Minnesota and the Bears both lose, they still get in the wild card. You know, I don't think you could think that way. I think you got to figure we've got to get this division, get ourselves a home game and not worry about what everybody else does. And so they're going to be going into this weekend thinking that. But it would be very exciting. You know, I don't think anyone 4 weeks ago thought that it would be compelling football to watch the Giants and the Eagles play at this point. But it's I'm telling you, we're going to have people over here at the Cary Avenue Bar and Grill fired up watching the game. And, you know, it'll be some exciting stuff. You know, and then it, once they get in, you know, if all these things do break their way and the Giants get in, you know, I mean, this is a team that 6-7 weeks ago people were talking about having the best offense in the league. I don't think that they're as bad as they've looked, and I don't think Eli's as bad as he's looked in the last 2 weeks, completing just over 50% of his passes, you know, and getting a meaningless touchdown last week late in the game, but not looking good all game. I mean, he's 14-28, and just, you know, just never really looked comfortable. But that being said, I don't think anybody wants to see them in the first round, and the way it's shaping up now looks like it could be Green Bay in that first round. And, man, I mean, Green Bay would be licking their chops to go play, you know, at home again against the Giants. But the Giants aren't going to be scared to go to Green Bay. They already beat them up bad this season once. And obviously you saw what happened last year. I wouldn't be worried about that at all. What do you think, Charlie?
I agree with you about not one. You just made me think of something. Out of the possible playoff teams in the NFC, which one would you want to see? This is the first time –
yeah.
Like, you know what? I hope we play that team in the first round. You don't want to play Seattle. You obviously don't want to play Green Bay. You don't want to play Washington.
Yeah.
Like, who? Chicago?
It's going to be whatever that last
right.
Is. Whether it's, I mean, Minnesota. Minnesota is just an amazing story.
You got AJ.
Right.
It's just amazing. You know what I mean? Usually there's that one team. You know what? I hope we play them.
Yeah, let me ask you. This is just going to, well, you mentioned Peterson, but I want to talk about him quickly. Now, in my opinion, and next week we're going to give our MVP picks after the season's all said and done. I say Adrian Peterson's the MVP. I get what Tom Brady's done this season is amazing. His stats are amazing. I get what Peyton Manning has done. But, you know, let's not forget those two teams both made the playoffs last year. See, you know, the Vikings, nobody picked them to go anywhere in the toughest division in football on paper before the season. And even throughout, I mean, you put the Lions in other divisions, I think they do very, very well. What he's done with no quarterback, I mean, with basically Mark Sanchez of Minnesota playing over there, no quarterback play, to put the season together he's putting together is just insane. You're just stacking the box, you know what's going to come, and it's like every week he breaks off one big run, whether, you know, and it's just, it's amazing, in my opinion. I mean, what would you say right now, who's your favorite for the MVP?
I would say the two you just said or Calvin Johnson. Because you could say the same thing about Calvin Johnson that you're saying about,
I'm so good in that. But that's, you know, you should host the show with me. Because that's such a good segue. And I'll also segue by saying this. I'm on my drive home from New Haven today. And
it was a quick one.
Yeah, it was just a quick two-hour drive to go about 30 miles down 95 today. Beautiful weather. It was great. But I refuse to listen to the fan in the afternoon because if I just can't stand Francesa, and I know he wasn't on today, I'm just in the habit of listening to ESPN New Haven, which I'm kept in New Haven and Hartford, and usually it's the Bauer show, which I've talked about on the show. I really like this show. But filling in today was some guy, the coach, whoever he was, and Zubin Mehenkin, who really I think got his start on the show. I mean, he was just like a little-known guy up in Denver, doing the Denver Fox Sports or whatever he was doing. He used to call on the show, high school classmate of my former co-host, O. And he's on the show. And I'm sitting there stuck in traffic. And they're not giving – I want to call in. And they weren't giving a call-in number. So I call up O, and I'm like, oh, you know, your boy's on ESPN Radio right now. He's hosting the drive home show. And he goes, yeah, he texted me, told me he's coming in. I said, they're not taking any calls. He says, yeah, that's for whatever reason, that guy, the coach, whatever, doesn't take calls. I said, well, I'm gonna, they were talking about the MVP, and then they were talking about most outstanding offensive player, and the other guy was saying, Zub had said Adrian Peterson. The other guy was talking about Peyton Manning, and then they were talking about, well, should whoever wins the MVP, should they also get most outstanding offensive player, the offensive player of the year? They both kind of agreed that, yeah, you should. And I said, well, ask them, what about Megatron? I don't think that Megatron could win the MVP only because of how bad they've been.
Mm-hmm.
But how could he not win Offensive Player of the Year? He's going to shatter
Jerry Rice's record. He already broke it a week ago. He's going to shatter this record on a team where they know that, I mean, I know they throw the ball more than anybody else, and Sack is going to break the record for, but they know they're throwing to this guy. And he's single handedly broke the Madden curse.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's going to shatter.
Theoretically, he can break the record for most yards from line of scrimmage, or
well,
receiving or rushing. Not
yeah, receiving or not combined. I think Falk or
right.
It could have been Chris Johnson. Somebody had that. But Gibbs always be a running back. But I don't know how he doesn't win Offensive Player of the Year.
I don't know.
And I told all that, oh, Texas to Zoom, and Zoom mentioned it on the air. He didn't mention me. Couldn't give PSG a shot, but I'm sure contractually, I mean,
yeah.
He's competing against us now. It's not like he's on the airwaves.
Yeah.
He's competing against China.
They signed that complete, a compete clause.
Yeah, that's right. So, but he said, he asked the guy, he goes, well, what about the, so we got, somebody's texting me in and saying, what about Megatron, and should he be in consideration? And the guy kind of poo-pooed it all. He gets garbage yards. Nobody gets that many garbage yards, man. Nobody can.
Yeah. And if they know that they're getting it. It's almost like Adrian Peterson. You know they're going to throw to him, and they're not getting it. So, you know, I don't know. I'm waiting on our callers to call in here. I don't know if Tony D, if you're still there, if you've heard anything from these guys. We got Coop and JT, the infamous James Tita. They're supposed to be calling in to do some Eagles trivia. Tony, I don't know if you've heard anything, but if you can try to get a hold of those guys and say, what gives?
Yeah, I'm going to give them a call now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, you're going to give them
a call?
Right.
Yeah, I'm gonna put in a couple calls and see where these knuckleheads are at, and I'll be back.
I'm going to hold up on talking about the Jets until after their talk, but I'll talk some Jets now to kill some time until they come. It should be good because I don't really want to talk much about the Jets. There's really not much to say. Hopefully we get these guys on soon, but I will say this was the first game in a couple of years that I didn't even watch a lot of the game. I watched the first half. I mean, it was a couple of days before Christmas. I went and visited my grandmother-in-law, and yeah, I watched the first half of the game, and what do you want to get out of it? Well, you always want them to kind of finish strong, but you also wanted to see what you have in McElroy. So, I mean, the question was, did you get enough out of that performance to tell either way? In my opinion, what you got was, at least he's not Ryan Lindley. He's not a complete disaster. The fact that he was 14 of 24, 185 yards, did have the pick and the fumble, with just an atrocious job by their offensive line. The fact that he dropped back the pass, he threw the ball 24 times, he had three scrambles. So he dropped back the pass 38 times and was sacked 11 of those times. It's just insane. It's absolutely insane. And he made some nice moves to get out of some trouble in the first half and scramble a little bit and move the chain. But it just goes to show you, what the Jets offense really is. And what I've been saying, I mean, they are, talent-wise, clearly the least talented offensive team. I don't care what you want to say about Arizona. I think they have less talent because they have nobody near the caliber of Larry Fitzgerald, and that alone puts them ahead of the Jets. I don't know where and I don't want to hear anything about the Jets' offensive line. They have Nick Mangold is very, very good. Brandon Moore is good. DeBrickashaw Ferguson stinks. You watch DeBrickashaw Ferguson. He had that one really good season. I know he made the Pro Bowl last year. Well, you watch that guy, I mean, he gets beat so consistently, he stinks. He is the most overrated offensive lineman in the freaking league. He stinks. And so I don't know what you want to say. I know they say they spent a lot of money on their offensive line. A lot of teams and a lot of sports spend a lot of money that don't work out. That doesn't mean they're good. I could tell you, every sport I could tell you a team. You could look at Brooklyn right now. They spend a lot of money and they all stink. Darrell Williams stinks. So, there's a lot of teams. I'm just talking about watching these games. They get beat consistently at the offensive line. You were hoping Slauson and Dukowski. I don't know why Dukowski's ever on the field. He's horrible. And so you look at that game and you say, well, what did you learn? I learned that Greg McElroy, you didn't see enough of him to say, okay, this guy could be an everyday starter. But I think he's shown that he could be a backup for any team. And the fact that he did not look overwhelmed. He didn't look frazzled, even getting hit all those times. He didn't look frazzled. Like I said, I mean, he completed a better percentage than Mark Sanchez did. But it also goes to show you what Mark Sanchez was working with. And I think that maybe, just maybe, it'll give the Jets enough of a cover to say, look, Mark Sanchez, you give us a seventh-round pick and we'll eat half his
salary, and maybe they could trade him to the Raiders or somebody like that. And then they're only taking a $4 million cap as opposed to the $8.5 million. They clearly can't cut him, so they're stuck with him next year. But his days with the Jets are done. Maybe they could say, look, I mean, you put him in a new situation with some offensive line and some weapons, and he could be something. So I don't know. But that's at this point, hopefully the last I talk about the Jets. I mean, going into this week, you know, would you want to see them win? There's plenty of different things you want to see them lose just to move up in the draft a pick or two. I don't really buy into that. I want to see them win. I never want to see a team lose just for the sake of a couple. I mean, maybe if it was for the first overall pick, the difference between 6 and 10 and 7 and 9 at this point, what's it going to get them? You know, they're still going to have a mid-first-round pick. And so just go out and win the game. Beat Buffalo. They're 3.5-point underdogs to freaking Buffalo. It just shows you how the Jets season is gone. Shows you where my article is.
Hey, watch your mouth.
Tony, you got them?
Yeah, I got them. You ready to go?
Yeah, we're ready to rock and roll. We're going to get them both on. What we did here, we got, like I mentioned at the start of the show, 99 bottles. You can check them out at 99bottles.com. Out of East Wall, Connecticut. Great store. Been a great supporter of our show since the beginning. That's 99. Spell out the word 90, the number 9, and then bottles.com. They got they specialize in the little micro brews and all the different kind of hipster beers out there. But they also got some Lucy's and 40s and all the drop. You got anything you want over there at 99 Bottles, Short Soul Lane. Go see them. Some of the Tri-State Sports guys sent you. What they did was they donated a nice Philadelphia Eagles pullover jacket. They said, you know, we give it away. So we tried to think of a creative way we can give away this jacket. Two Eagles fans came to my mind. The great James Pita, who has not been on the show in several months because he's off doing things for 30, I mean, much bigger things than the Tri-State Sports guys. No, he's a big Eagles fan. We wanted to get him back on the show before the end of the year. James, are you with us, brother?
I am, my friend, and trust me, nothing that I'm doing is bigger or better than you guys. Just paying. That's it.
Well, that's right. I guess it's more, that means it's bigger and better there, JC. And then one of our first guests we ever had on the show, my man Coop, he came in. I mean, the ladies love him. Smooth-talking Coop came on our show back when we were still videotaping our shows. And the fan letters were just flooding us. That's basically why we had to stop doing video. I mean, we're a talk show. You know, we're not about looks over here. So we had to cut that out. But we know you're a big Philly fan in every sport. Coop, you with us, brother? Jeremy Coop.
I'm here, brother. How you guys doing?
Doing very good. So we had Tony D. And me up with 20 questions. We're going to ask each of you 10 questions. Start with Coop. I'm going to go through. Whoever gets the most questions wins the jacket. I got a tiebreaker question that if it should come down to a tie. Now, Coop, are you ready? You're going to have 5 seconds to answer it. Now, I know you could be looking stuff up on the internet, but if you're cheating to win a pullover jacket, then maybe this.
I am ready, Mike. I'm ready.
All right. First question. Who is the Eagles owner?
Jeffrey Lurie.
There you go. Starting off with a nice easy one. How many NFC East titles did Andy Reid win as the head coach of the Eagles?
Is this my question?
Yes. I'm going to give you all 10. Yeah, sorry. I'm going to give you all 10 and then Jake D. all 10.
Oh, okay.
How many NFC titles did Andy Reid win?
4.
6. That's the wrong one. All right. Where did Reggie White go to college? That's what's tough. I didn't know this one. I had to look this up. And I used to love them. Yeah, 2 7.
I don't know.
Tennessee. All right, this one came in from Neil. I think this is pretty tough, but you might know this thing. So there's been 8 players who've had numbers retired by the Philadelphia Eagles. Name 4 of them.
4 players who've had their numbers retired?
Yeah, there's been 8. You got to name half of them.
Jerome Brown.
So there's 1.
Reggie White.
There you go. There's 2. 2 more.
Brian Dawkins.
3. The last one. They got 1 more.
It should be retired, but I don't think it is. But I'm going to say Randall Cunningham.
It is not. Sorry. The ones you missed is Stevie Van Buren, Tom Brookshire. I don't know him. Pete Redcliffe, Chuck Benarek. Al Winstern. True or false question. Buddy Ryan never won a playoff game as an Eagles head coach.
True.
That's correct. That's a tough one. When was the Philadelphia Eagles franchise founded? What year?
Jeez. No multiple choice on this. I'm going to have to say definitely sometime, say 1930s, 1934.
Oh, 1933, Coop. You're on the right track, brother. All right. This one came from Tony D. It's a multiple choice question. Which of these teams did the Eagles not play in the 2001-2002 playoff run? So I'm going to give you four teams. They did not play one of these teams. Is it the Packers, the Bears, the Rams, or the Bucks? This is the 2001-2002 season.
Packers.
Packers is correct. Who's the Eagles' all-time leader in passing yards?
Passing yards?
Yeah.
My man, Mac 5.
That is correct. Who was the last team the Eagles beat in the playoffs?
The last team they beat in the playoffs were the Bears.
The New York Football Giants. And last question.
I should have guessed that.
What's that? Who did the Eagles lose to in Super Bowl 15?
In the Super Bowl what?
In Super Bowl 15, who did the Eagles lose to back in the Dick Vermeil days?
15.
That's a tough question.
Let's go with the Colts.
This was the Oakland Raiders. I believe they were in Oakland. Could have been
LA. I was thinking the Raiders.
Well, JT, Coop got 1, 2, 3, 4. Right. You got to beat 4 to get the jacket. All right, JT, you ready, brother?
I'm ready, my friend. That's going to be tough, although I did know some of those. So let's see.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to say the same thing about yours. I tried to make him evenly. Who's the head coach prior to Andy Reid? Who did he take over? You might be too young.
I don't know that. I'm going to guess Buddy Ryan.
No, Ray Rhodes. When was the last time the Eagles had a sub-500 record before this year?
That was
It was the 2005 season. 2005-2006, they went 6-10. What did the Eagles draft Reggie White?
What was that question? Can you repeat that?
Yeah, what year did the Eagles draft Reggie White? And I got my in studio. Kylan's calling shite on that. He thinks you're looking this up. But what do you got?
I'm not looking it up. I'm 1982.
1982, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah. 85. Okay. All right.
I would never slander this show by looking stuff up. This is coming from my heart and my head.
I know. I'm just teasing here. All right. Question number 4. I think this stuff came from Neil. In the past 2 seasons, the Eagles have inducted 2 players into their Hall of Fame/honor roll. Name those 2 players.
One is Brian Dawkins. The other is, I'm going to say the late, great Reggie White.
That's incorrect. They're both on the honor roll, but they got on before, I assume, because it's Eric Allen and Troy Vincent.
Okay.
You said you're good. Okay, true false question. Andy Reid has more wins with the Eagles than the previous 3 coaches combined. So that's Buddy Ryan, Richie Kotite, and Ray Rhodes. True or false, Andy Reid has more wins with the Eagles than all 3 of them combined.
True.
That is correct. What was Andy, this came from Tony D, what was Andy Reid's record in 1999, his first season with the Eagles?
That would be, wow, that's a tough one. 5-11.
5-11 is correct.
That was a guess.
It's 4-2 right now. You got 4 questions left. You got to answer 2 of them correct to send it to the tiebreaker. Number 7 is a multiple choice question. Who is the only Eagle named to the Pro Bowl following that 1999 season? Was it Deuce Staley, Ryan Dawkins, Hugh Douglas, or Troy Vincent? One of those guys made.
Wow, it's a tough one. I have it narrowed down in my head to 2, and I'll go Brian Dawkins.
Brian Dawkins is correct. Storm is back. All right.
All right.
This one came from, I don't know, I think this one came from Tony D. The movie Invincible was based on what former Eagle player?
Oh, I know that one because I've watched the movie and I love the story. Vince Papale.
Vince Papale, my man. All right, all you got to do is answer 1 of the next 2 questions correct. How many points did the Eagles lose to the Pats by in Super Bowl 39?
The Eagles to the Patriots?
Yeah.
I know the score, too. I know the score, too. It's 3 points, 24-21.
There you go. There's your 5th one. You got to check it. Just for fun, the 10th question, who was the last team the Eagles lost to in the playoffs?
The last team the Eagles lost to in the playoffs? I know that one because I watched it and I said the winner of this game is going to the Super Bowl. That would be the Green Bay Packers, eventual Super Bowl champs.
Packers and James Tata, I mean, a contributor to the show for a very long time. James, congratulations, buddy. Coop, I know, would you say you probably knew all these answers, right? You got the hard 10?
Yeah, not all of them, but I'm doing the majority of them. No, I'm just joking.
It was a good battle, my friend.
My tiebreaker was going to be, and this is going to be who came closer. How many rushing yards does Shady McCoy have this year? Coop, how many would you say Shady McCoy's got this year?
Right now. Rushing yards.
Just rushing yards.
912.
912. JT, what would you have said?
Well, I'm going to preface this because I have him on my fantasy team. And although I do not know it exactly, I have an unfair advantage. And with the week that he just played, I'm going to say 793.
Oh, my God, 795. That's pretty impressive. Well, JT, I'm very happy to have you back involved in the show. You're obviously welcome to call in anytime you want. How's everything going? You got anything cool you're working on you want to talk about?
Yeah, man, if you don't mind me doing a little shameless plug here, I just finished up production assistant, production coordinator work on a new show for the Style Network. Gentlemen, I know you like to keep your ladies happy out there and you're smart men for doing so. It's a very women-oriented show. It's about male models that come in and remodel your home, and it debuts on the Style Network January 28th. There's my shameless plug for the evening. I feel like I earned that with the victory.
Oh, yeah, you did earn that. We're going to post a link to that on our site and try to get as many people to watch that because that seems like a show I'd really sink my teeth into. Coop, what do you got? You got anything to plug? How's Georgetown basketball doing?
What's that?
How's Georgetown basketball doing this year? I haven't been following. Are they doing anything?
Georgetown basketball will be just fine this year, I assure you.
All right, man. Well, you'll come on. We'll have you on again to talk some college basketball, maybe some Sixers talk. They're probably better than the freaking Nets right now. So, well, thank you both. JT, we'll get this jacket out to you right away. You're going to love it. You take a picture of yourself wearing it. I mean, you want to talk about a lady. The lady's going to love you in this beautiful Eagles pullover. Thanks again, guys. I'm so excited.
I don't even have words.
All right. Well, good luck this weekend, guys. Thanks again. So that was our Eagles trivia game. It was our first trivia contest we've had. I think it went pretty well, Tony D. I think we had some tough questions. Some of these questions, I don't know. I'm trying to think to myself, would I know the same type of question about the Jets? I'm trying to think of the ring. When you sent around your questions, Tony, and then Neil sent his around, I don't know if I would know whose numbers are retired from the Jets. I mean, I know the obvious ones, but,
I went my questions were somewhat, I want to say easy, but, Neil sent his questions, and I was like, wow, I don't think I had a chance.
Neil asked who wrote the theme song to their type, whatever. I don't know. I didn't ask that one. So I picked some of his. I tried to pick some of yours, and I went with some of mine. I threw a couple of easy ones out, but I think it went pretty well. Again, thanks to Shore and Rich and Jill and Kim over at 99 Bottles. We'll post something up on our website where you could check them out as well. Very nice of them. They've done a lot for the show, so we always appreciate them. Tony, you want to do some say what while you're on the line or what?
Sure, man. I'm ready to go over there.
All right, go for it, dude.
All right, so what do we got? Let's start with – I'm just going to put this out there right now. I'm not telling you what to say what. Have either of you guys seen Steve Nash's hair?
I did see it. I only saw it for the first time last night or yesterday watching the game. What is up with that?
Is that some kind of, like, Euro, like, something we're missing at somewhere like Italy or something like that? Because that is not good looking at all.
He's from British Columbia, man. It's a weird group out there. And a nice people on British Columbia. I met a bunch of them when I was in Australia. They are some weird folk out there, I'll tell you. And, he's a proud BC guy.
Unbelievable. He was running up and down the court the other day, and half of his head was bouncing up and down. And, like, just hair was just completely uneven, and kind of, he looked like a hot mess.
Not to sound like a cliche, but it looks like he lost the bet. It looks like he got, like, pranked and he was, like, jackass. You know, they always go up and they give him, like, a little buzz, like, when they're not looking, like, outside.
Somebody,
that's what it looked like to happen to him.
Like somebody hit him with the number 1.5 clipper.
Just clipped him. Just got him when he wasn't looking. But I'll tell you what, though, man. He's come back. I know it's only been a little short sample, but it looked a lot better on offense with Steve Nash.
Oh, yeah, man. The ball moves around a lot better. He can, you know, he gets the ball to Kobe. He gets it to, you know, Dwight Howard. I mean, he's, yeah, they definitely look a hell of a lot better with him out there.
I just have to mention one quick stat about basketball. I watched some basketball yesterday. I obviously couldn't watch all the games. But did you see the stat? LeBron James had a personal foul yesterday. Sean, did you see the stat? Did you hear about this? He had a personal foul yesterday. He had not had a foul called against him in 17 days.
What?
17 days in between personal foul calls against him. 6 full games. He went 6 games without getting a foul called against him.
Oh, wow. How is that? I'm not even sure how that's even possible.
How could you have 6 games where you go without having a foul against you? That's impossible, dude. I don't care. This guy plays 35, 40 minutes a night. But the refs aren't biased, though.
Unbelievable.
What else you got? What else you got for Tom?
What do you guys think about the Chiefs? They sent 5 people to the Pro Bowl. Jamal Charles, Tamba Hali, Derek Johnson, Eric Berry, and a punter. How is that even?
Yeah,
how does that even work?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, people make fun of me when I say that Rex Ryan's actually done a good job with this team. I don't know how you could even name one Pro Bowler that team. Cromartie, maybe. I mean, that would mean Romeo Crennelli would be worse because they're a terrible team. If they have 5 Pro Bowlers on that team and they're as bad as they are, Romeo Crennelli's got to stick to being a D coordinator, my man. Cause, man, that's embarrassing. They just came out tonight, right, the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, just came out a little while ago.
Yeah. All right, we'll check that out.
So what about your boy now? Coop was saying the other day, I was talking to him, he said you were crazy, but Darren Williams, you know, he's out. He's out tonight for the Nets. He's got a sore wrist. I know that's your point, Mike, so what do you think?
He stinks, dude. And if Coop is going to defend Darren Williams, he does not watch the game. I watch 80% of the Nets games, and O makes fun of him because he thinks I'm the only guy that watches regular season NBA basketball. I watch a lot of the Nets. I love him. And I will tell you, he has not been good since he's been a Net. His production since he's been a Net has been really down what we thought we were getting when the trade happened. But, I mean, the guy is shooting 39%. He just got over 39% from the floor, 28.5% from behind the arc. His assists are at a career low. Explain to me how this guy's a max player. Explain to me how he's even a top 5 point guard. He's not a top 5 point guard. And you know, Rich from Milford, who's a fan of the show, got on me too, texts me and says, name 5 point guards who are better than him. I'm like, I can probably name you more than 5 that are better than him. He's not a good – I mean, he's good – but if he's your best player, you're not going anywhere. He has not been good, and it's not just like a bad start. Now he's blaming it on it, you know, on the coach and this and that. Look, I said last year when we were talking, it was, I think during a say what, when I could have been doing a Dirty Year series, but we were talking about him complaining about Dwight Howard and the Nets not getting it done, and he wasn't going to resign. I said, well, you know what, go away then. You got to now, this guy is such a prima donna, you now have to – He picks and chooses which guys he gets to play with. Shut up, Darren Williams. You didn't earn anything. He already ran a legendary Hall of Fame coach out of a job in Utah. He comes over here, and now it's this coach's fault. And it has nothing to do with the fact that he's shooting 28% from behind the arc. Shut up, Darren Williams. And if Coop wants to talk to me off the air about Darren Williams, I will talk about Darren Williams.
Oh, he I love it.
He is one of my – you know how much I hate Santonio Holmes? He is approaching Santonio Holmes-like anger that I feel about. That's how much I dislike Darren Williams.
Oh, man. So how about this? I just saw this come across the line. This is a throwback to O's boy. Ugas Urbina got released from jail today after 5.5 years for attempted murder. You remember this guy?
Well, he came at a dude with a sword or something, right? Or
yeah, he's like from work.
He's trying to kill
workers that were at his house. 5.5 years he spent in jail. He just got out today.
He'll probably be a Met in the next week or two. He used to bullpen house. I bet you Oogie's probably working on his game.
Okay, let's go. I got two more for you. You think Michael Vick playing this weekend could do anything to boost his stock to where he goes next year?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you mean just in next week's game?
Yeah.
Alone? I mean, I think that he's going to have teams after him. And that's one of the only things. I thought he was going to go to the Jets. I don't think the Jets are going to have. I think he's going to command a decent amount of interest from several teams. Most notably, I think Arizona is going to be the team that's going to go after him. I think that, you know, his arm is still very good. His legs are not what they used to be. They're still very good. I think if he goes out there when the nation is watching him this week against the Giants, and has a big game, I think he could raise his stock. But I don't think he's going to have any problem. He will be starting week one for an NFL team next year, I think. What do you think? Am I off base on that?
No, I agree. I agree 100%. He'll be up in Buffalo, though.
Ninth attack is the top 10 quarterback. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he is. Man, that guy is. Has anybody fallen off harder than him, man? Nice big contract, and now he stinks. It was the beard.
He'll be a Jet next year. Take a trade. You can't make this one.
All right, last one. I don't know if you had any plans to talk about your boy Tim Tebow. But what do you make of this whole deal of him? You know, now he came out today. He says he never said he didn't want to do. You know, he didn't want to do anything. He says that was all. That wasn't the talk. He said Rex knows that. Everybody on his team knows that I would never do something that, you know, if I was asked, do it. You think this is true? You think he refused to go in?
I do think he refused to go in. I think he's a phony. I think it's the first, and I've been giving him credit all year. As much as I'm not a fan of his, I said, you know what, he is the real deal. He's been saying the right things. Over the last week or so, his frustration has been showing. Now he's saying, well, no, I didn't ask not to play. I just asked Coach Ryan that I just asked him that I should have the right to be just play the role of a regular quarterback, which is basically exactly what he's saying. I don't want to be the wild card quarterback. I want to be the regular quarterback. And, you know, he's just too much of a goody-goody to admit that that's what he is. You know, it's kind of a damn if you do, damn if you don't. You know, we hate athletes that bitch and moan to the press when they're not getting playing time on one hand. But on the other hand, I think that he built up enough credibility that this could have been the time he had the balls to go out and say, yeah, I was mad. Yeah, I asked out. You know, I did everything they were asking me, and I got walked over. I believe that. I mean, look, the idea that he's some sort of victim here because he was promised X or Y when he got traded here. Since when do you get promised anything at any job, let alone in the NFL? You come here, you compete for a job. Matt Flynn, I'm sure, was promised he was going to be the starting quarterback in Seattle when they signed that contract. Things change. Yep. Nobody knew how good Russell Wilson was going to be. He came in and beat him out for a job. That's just how it works. And I'm sure, you know, anybody who's been benched, that's how it's been. You think that, you know, when you get signed, I'm sure every college freshman was told in their living room by some coach they were going to be starting tailback, or you're going to have every opportunity to start a quarterback. Does that mean they were lied to when they're not the starting quarterback or the starting tailback? No. So I don't feel bad for him. He didn't win the job, and we knew he wasn't a good practice quarterback, and he stunk. So you know what? Good riddance to him. I think that I'm 100% sure that he asked to not play, and now he's kind of backtracking, and I would have more respect for him after building up his credibility over the last, 10 months or whatever since he's been signed. He just said, yeah, you know, I've been honest with you guys. I've been saying the right thing. I feel, you know, I've had enough. So that's my opinion on it.
I agree. Do you think he'll be starting next year in Jacksonville?
I don't know. I'll tell you, I think if he goes to Jacksonville, the fans will demand it like they demanded it out in Denver. But he's not better than Chad Henne. Chad Henne's a decent quarterback, man. I mean, you know, I watch obviously a lot of Dolphins games when they play the Jets, and he's got a big-time arm. He can make plays. He's a little bit of like a Rex Grossman where he makes a lot of bad mistakes too, but he can play. He's definitely better than Tim Tebow. But I think if he goes there, he's such a god down in northern Florida, he's gonna have to play. And I don't think the new owner, I know the fans are demanding it, and maybe some of the other people in the front office believe in it just because of money-wise. But I think, you know, if they really, really wanted him, that owner really wanted him, they would up their offer in the offseason, and they didn't. So I don't know how badly they really want it, but if they get him there, he's going to have to play because the fans will, and they don't show up now. You can't have a guy that you know could sell at the stadium and have him on your bench. And Jacksonville, it's a different world down there.
I agree completely. Looks like we got Owen on the line over here.
We do. Joining us on the 99 Bottles Hotline, we have O. Couldn't make it over here in the weather. Oh, how's the weather out there? I haven't been, you know, down in the studio. I don't get to see it. We still getting some rain, sleet. What do we got? Give us a weather update.
I mean, it doesn't look good. I mean, they don't plow the streets where you live, you said. I mean, they plow the ones around here, but, you know, who knows? It's like the Wild West where you live, so I just wasn't sure what was going on over there.
I used to live in a great neighborhood when I moved in here, where I settled in and wanted to raise a family here, and then Coach Ireland bought a house, not 20 houses up the road from me. Since then, you look in the police blotter every day of the week, somebody on Perry Avenue, this one's driving into a house. This one ran somebody over with their car, hit him with a bat every other day. And this is a peaceful little neighbor. You could raise a nice family. You know, Shawnee moves in and the thing goes to hell.
No,
right,
man.
People,
they pollute the neighborhood.
That's what it was. They're going to get the boot. My value of my house is just plummeting.
That's great.
So, what do you got for us? Now, here, I'm going to give you a little bit of what we talked about so far. We went over the Giants, the different scenarios of how they can make the playoffs, and it's not that far-fetched. Even though a lot of Giants fans are kind of just writing it off like there's no chance, I mean, any one of those three teams they need to lose can lose and it would not surprise me.
Yep.
What do you think that – I mean, even if you were to put, you know, any one of those games, you know, the money line's not going to be crazy. I mean, what do you think realistically the chances are that the Giants – can get everything to break their way this weekend? And what do you think the hardest thing that they need to have happen will be?
I would think, I mean, maybe, you know, I would say the easiest thing, I don't know what the hardest is because it's either I think the Cowboys can definitely beat the Redskins, but I also think that I could see the Bears winning. Which would kill them, but is Forte definitely out? Do we know that?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not following that crap.
I think if Forte plays, then the Giants are in trouble. But if Forte's out, then they have a good chance because I could see. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Vikings are going to lose, and I could see the Bears losing. And in that Redskin Cowboy game, anything's possible.
I agree with you. Now, I mentioned that I don't think it's a guaranteed win for the Giants, though. I mean, you got Andy Reid's last game as an Eagles coach, Michael Vick in a semi-audition. What do you think? I mean, is it the line
Michael
opened
Vick.
Up at 9.5, came down to 7 already in the last couple of days.
The
so it's probably settling somewhere around
though.
6.5. What do you think?
Problem is the Eagles' defense stinks, but I am sure Michael Vick's going to have a good game because he ruined two of my fantasy leagues. So now that they're over, I'm sure that he's going to come and become unbelievable again. Him and McCoy, all of a sudden, they'll remember how to play football. But defensively, they have a lot of problems. So I don't know if, even if the Eagles score, if the Giants, I mean, if they can stop anybody on the Giants. Although your boy Eli Manning hasn't been playing great, which I'm sure has depressed you very much.
Well, I opened the show with a lot of Giants talk, and I pointed out that to Neil's article he wrote for our website. I don't know if you got a chance to check it out on
TriStateSportsGuys.com.
You did check it out or no?
I did, you know. But
he posted, I mean, it was right there in black and white. He posted Eli Manning's stats, and it was clear as day. You look at the wins and you look at their losses, and, you know, it is how the Giants go is how Eli Manning goes. And I know the Giants defense gets a lot of blame for it all, but the Giants defense has clearly won at least one big game for them. Maybe their first signature win of the season against the Niners was clearly on the defense's back. It had nothing to do with Eli Manning. And then, you know, the game against Green Bay, I thought the defense played very well as well. So, you know, you want to point the blame on one side of the ball or the other. I agree the defense is not what they used to be, but the offense wasn't either. And to be honest with you, you know, last year was about the offense. So
I don't know.
I mean, he's going to need to come out and silence a lot of critics. And I know there's some Giants fans that'll never criticize him, but he's going to have to silence a lot of the you know, just watchers of this game and see. Let's go ahead and be better than your brother. I mean, people were talking week three of the season he's better than his brother, and that he was a top two or three quarterback in the league. It shows
the only,
you how
the only. The only thing I would question, though, is that although Eli clearly hasn't played well at all, it's not like I watch these games and I think that he's overthrowing people and he's making awful throws. It just seems, I don't know if it's maybe bad play calling or bad reads or what it is, but it just something, just, it seems like they don't have a lot of life. And it's not like guys wide open and he's missing them. So I'm not sure what to make of that.
I disagree. I'll tell you, and I mentioned this to Neil last week, I could point to at least one or two throws every single game during the last four or five games where they take the shot downfield, Victor Cruz or Nix or somebody, Hickson has to step on the guy, and he overthrows him. And it's that, and those are the things that Eli Manning last year was not overthrowing that. And they are a home run hitting team. That's how their offense is set up. That's how they were last year. They were big time on big plays. They led the league in big plays. And I think that they're not the type of team to put together a 14-play drive. They're the type of team that'll sit there and wait, find a play, to, you know, take a shot. I think he is smart like his brother, where he knows to look at what the defense is giving him and know when to take a shot. But this year, he's not hitting those home runs that he was hitting.
But see, I think the difference is I think that they should they have the talent to be a 14-play drive team, and for some reason or not. So when he overthrows a guy, I mean, he throws like all of a sudden you'll look up, he'll have 180 yards and no touchdowns. That's not one home run away from having a good game. Even if he hit a home run, he's still having a very average game. So it just seems like something's missing. Maybe it's the whole dynamic of how people are playing. Maybe it's because they're not using Martellus Bennett as much as people thought they would. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'll be curious to hear. I mean, we get a lot of people that download our show and don't get to listen to us live. We set up a voicemail a few weeks ago, and we've been getting some funny ones in. If you have something and you keep it PG, we'll play it on the air. But our voicemail number, you can call us anytime. So if you're listening to the show and it's, you know, Friday or Saturday, give us a call at 203-651-8741. Call us up, leave us anything we've said today. But, you know, we've been focused a lot on the Giants, because they're kind of the story of what's going on right now. And you know, after the football season, we'll get into a lot more basketball and baseball offseason stuff. But right now, we're mostly football-centric. So I'll be curious to see. I mean, I disagree even with what you just said. I mean, like you said, you know, you look up and he's got 180 yards. Well, yeah, last year he'd have 180 yards and he hits one big home run for 60. And now all of a sudden, no, he's got 240 yards. You look at the game when they beat the Redskins. He wasn't having a great game. And then he goes and throws, you know, an 80-yard touchdown pass to Victor Cruz, and you look up and you say, oh, now he's having a decent day. I think that's been the way he's compiled his numbers, and that's even the way he's compiled his numbers in the season. I mean, a lot of his yards came in a couple games. He had a 500-yard game, earlier in the year. I just think that that's how he's been in the last several years. They've been the home run hitters, and that's Kevin Gilbride. That's been how they do it. And they're not going to change, and they're not going to be the, you know, the 14-play drive type of team, but I don't know. I'll be curious to see. I agree with you. Any of those scenarios could happen, really. I mean, if you look at any of those games that they need to have go their way, none of them would surprise me. There's no, like I said when I opened the show, I mean, the Cowboys are a more talented team than the Redskins. I think on both sides of the ball. I think the Redskins don't have any pass rush on defense. They seem to make stops, but I don't think talent-wise they're as good as the Cowboys are. And then on offense, you know, as great as RG3 is, Tony Romo's having a great season again. I mean, I would not be surprised at all if the Cowboys come out and win that game.
I agree with you. I mean, the Redskins really aren't that good. They just have a very good quarterback. And when Garcon plays, they have a dynamic there. And Morris is good, but the defense is very shaky. And they don't have a lot of good support players. They win enough. They do enough to win games. But, you know, this has all the makings of next year. They're going to get a tougher schedule, and they'll be, you know, 8-8, 7-9.
Oh, and I can see them falling back like, you know, like the Lions did this year or something like that. So, all right, let me give you the four games. Oh, and you're going to give me the winner in each one. Chicago, Detroit, who's winning that game?
I'm going to go Chicago.
Minnesota and the Packers, who's winning?
100% Green Bay.
All right, Redskins, Dallas?
Where's that game?
In Washington. Yeah, it's in Washington.
In Washington?
Yeah.
I'll go Redskins.
All right, and then the Giants, Eagles.
I'll take the Giants.
Do you think they're going to cover the 7?
Yes, I do. Because I don't think the Eagles play enough defense. But that still has them out of the playoffs because the Bears will win, right?
The Bears win and they're out, yeah. I gave Neil some credit earlier in the show because he's the one that predicted, the only person I heard anywhere after week 10 say that the Redskins were going to win the East. I mean, nobody thought they were going to win the NFC. I laughed at him when he said they were 4-6. He said, I said, the Giants still have this division locked up. Cowboys don't scare me. That was when the Eagles were free-falling. I said, there's no way. And he goes, no. The team that's going to win is going to be Washington Redskins. You can go back and listen to that show in the archives. And he predicted it, and I laughed at him. I said, are you crazy? And he predicted that, so I want to give him credit where credit's due. I want to give you credit for a bold prediction you made last year. We did our bold prediction for 2012, and we're going back and forth. And
all
maybe
right.
Or maybe not, I predicted Mark Sanchez would throw for 4,000 yards.
Yeah.
But you had said you don't think that Tim Tebow will ever start a game in the NFL, and I laughed, belly laughed at that. But so far, you're right, dude, and it's going down the path. There was a GM, an anonymous GM, that says that he doesn't think he'll be in the NFL next year.
Listen, I printed out my bold predictions, and that was my number two prediction, was that Tim Tebow will not be a starting quarterback at this time next year, which was first week of December. Now remember, that's even before his magic and they beat the Steelers and everybody flying high. But I'm telling you, man, I love the guy. He's a Gator, but he is, maybe he goes to Jacksonville and he'll start, but he has really, the Jets screwed him. The Jets ruined him. I don't know if it's his own doing or their doing, but something happened and he got ruined.
Yeah, ruined because he stinks. But,
maybe he got exposed. That's what I'm saying. Maybe he stunk, but he didn't just suddenly stink. Maybe he's always stunk, and for whatever reason, he got exposed this year. He wasn't any different last year.
No, I know. But also, you know, he didn't put up good numbers last year. He won games for a variety of different reasons, and because their coaching staff was creative and could tailor
a
team. This season, that's amazing. The Jets just don't have that kind of
But you know what, though? I blame him. When he came over there, everyone wondered why he would go there. Everybody was like, why would he go to the Jets? And he made the wrong choice. So he only has himself to blame.
He does. Now, you have the list in front of you. We've got to get to our top 10, but give me a couple of highlights, some highs and some lows. Some top 10 bold predictions that you hit and some that you missed on.
Now, my number 10... sadly, is I'm actually probably going to be wrong because I had the Raiders will win 5 games. It looks like they're only going to win 4 games. So all those people that thought the Raiders were on their way up, I knew they had no shot. I did say that RG3 will outwin Luck. It looks like he's going to tie Andrew Luck in a number of wins. And one of the worst ones was I had Peyton Manning will go to the Dolphins and he will not start week 1. He has.
Wow, I forgot all about that. That was very bold. You got the bold part right.
Yeah, and then I had Jose Reyes winning the MVP, which obviously didn't happen. I had Yu Darvish making the All-Star team. I had the BCS will change, which it did. My number one, I don't know if this counts because it's on its way to happening. I had Sidney Crosby will retire. Now, he hasn't played, but that's only because the season hasn't started. But I do think he's going to retire.
So that's a pretty good. That's a pretty good hit, right? I mean, we made sure that our predictions were bold. You know.
Do you remember yours?
Well, that was good. I have no idea what I predicted. The only one I remember distinctly before the at that point was that Cinch has 4,000 yards. I think he's going to fall just short. If he hadn't been benched, maybe he could have put together a couple 600-yard games, Tecmo Bowl style, and caught me. But I think I was a little shy on that one. But we'll do some bowl predictions next week for 2013. We'd love to have you back on, call in, and give us some bowl predictions because you did. I'm sure you did better than me. But I'm going to give you our top 10 this week, and I'll hang on to the line. And give you some credit. Oh, Moose, give me one of those two. So I'm going to give
Moose
you the top 10 most compelling. Moose is making. Oh, you can have one too, Moose.
Okay.
Moose is fixing us a cocktail here. Oh. Ma, he fixed me a nice one. Moose is here at the Prairie Avenue Bar and Grill behind the thing. I like it. So he just fixed me a Jameson on the Rocks, little nightcap here as we're wrapping up the show, wrapping up 2012. So we went with top 10 most compelling stories of 2012 in the sports world. You could interpret compelling however you want. It could be good or bad. Number 10, I got Notre Dame football. I think it made it so compelling. In addition to the hype that always surrounds Notre Dame, was that we had Colin Coward and Rick Riley coming out before the season talking about how both of them independently said that Notre Dame was no longer an elite franchise, an elite program. They were no longer should be considered a powerhouse, this and that. And in that same season, they put together the season that they had, the amount of nail biters that they've had. I know they're 10.5-point underdogs, but that'll happen in 2013. This 2012 season was just, as a Notre Dame fan, as exciting as I can remember. I was a little kid. Number 9, I went with the replacement refs. It seems like so long ago, but that was all we talked about. But when you put in the context, you look at right now, we don't have an NHL season. Nobody talks about that. Nobody cares about the strike. You don't even know whether there's a strike or a lockout. You're like, I don't know. For some reason, NHL's not playing. We don't care about it. The refs were on strike. And it was like daily, you have to talk about it. That's how much bigger football is than everything else. This was just the refs. And it was all anybody talked about. And it was one of the things I was wrong about. I said, oh, who cares? It'll be fine. You won't even notice it. And then it was so obvious. They were so overwhelmed. They couldn't even control a game. It was just huge. And it seems like so long ago, and we're back to hating the regular refs because they all stink too. But at least they know the teams that they're – they don't say they just call the color of the jersey because they forget what game they're reffing. And they're not, middle school refs. Number 8, and I want to get your feedback on this because you weren't around on the show when we really went into detail this, but I went with the Strasburg inning count. It could have, lasting impacts on the game and how general managers and managers treat, stud pitchers. But, people have been on innings counts. It was a job of rules. There was all these different things. But never has there been an ace pitcher shut down in the middle of a pennant race of a team that legitimately had a chance to win the World Series. What were your thoughts on it? And, am I overstating it to say that it's one of the most compelling stories of 2012?
Well, it had a lot of – listen, I'm a Raider fan, so I know about bad management and a Met fan. It had a lot of Jets and a lot of Mets and Raiders in it. Like, clearly they didn't think about this in advance, because had they thought about it, about the chance to make the playoffs, they would have paired his innings in the beginning of the year, like they did to Medlin on the Braves. And the fact that they spent all his innings and then, even if we make the playoffs, we don't want him. Like, why wouldn't you want him if you were going to make the playoffs? Like, if you thought about it, you would have started him in a bullpen or just let him start an extended spring training and come in June. It was incredible, but you'll see other teams do it, but they'll do it in a smarter way. That'll never happen again where some idiot team lets their best player not be able to play in the playoffs. If anything,
and announces
save them.
In spring training, announces it. We're going to shut him down after 160 innings, but we're going to open him in the major leagues, opening day. It was just... it makes you really want to root against them.
Oh, Moose, you got a point on this? I just got a question because something I thought. Do you guys think that's going to affect if he re-signs with them or not? Because he was heated when they said that. Like, heated, heated.
I could listen. I think that if they don't go out and win, if they don't win a World Series while he's still under his, pre-arbitration days, I could definitely see that being a factor. That they say, well, you know, they always look back at 2012. They go on a run, and we talk about it. I mean, look at the Phillies team over the last 5 years, how great they were, and they only won one World Series. And you look at it and you say, well, maybe this was our chance to go out and do it. And I know now they're adding guys, and they still look like they're getting better, but you never know. You could see maybe the Dodgers are going to win the next three, National League championships, and they don't have any chance. And then he goes to resign, and he's like, well, we had our chance, and you screwed me over. I could definitely see that coming into play. They're going to need to win a World Series, I think, to keep it. I really do think this. That's a good point, Shawnee. That's why we have you in studio, my man. All right, number seven, I went with the New York Football Giants playoff run. Again, it seems like so long ago, but the improbability of going on the run they went on. I mean, even the week, their first game against the Falcons, you know, I don't think anybody was surprised that they won, but they went out and dominated that game. I think it was like 23-2 or something. They just dominated the game. And then to go into Green Bay and beat the 15-1 Green Bay Packers, and then to go into San Francisco. They spanked them. Yeah, that was not a game. You could look at any other way. They spanked them. Then to go into San Francisco. Well, and just to think that, you know, everybody was figuring that New Orleans was going to win and they were going to go to New Orleans. They could never win there. So they got the break of that. They go into San Francisco and, you know, they get the breaks that they get, but they capitalize on all of them. When they got the turnover, they score. You know, they get another turnover, they score. They didn't leave points on the field. And they go out and win that game and put up points against that defense. And then they go in and have another fourth-quarter drive against Belichick and Tom Brady. And, you know, the Tyree catch is more famous, but the throw that he made, that Eli Manning made to Manningham, it of me watching, Super Bowl, so I don't remember, like, the catch, all these, you know, plays from the 80s. I'm talking about my day. I mean, I put that up there with, you know, Roethlisberger to Santonio in the corner. And one of the better throws I've ever seen, even though it wasn't a scoring play. Just the time of it, it was amazing. That Giants playoff run will stick with me for a while. So I got to put that on there. Number six, I got Adrian Peterson. And, you know, him tearing up his knee where people were questioning whether he even walked straight again, how badly. I mean, he screwed up ACL, MCL, everything was destroyed. And, you know, best case scenario, he was going to be back midseason. He's back game one, and he's on the verge of going over 2,000 yards and a possible MVP award. All, you know, and we talked with the MVP, and I went into again that during the top 10, but just amazing, that story. And it just gets more compelling. It's like every week, like, there's the highlights, and we're going to go out to Minnesota, and there he is running for an 80-yard run. Just been absolutely unbelievable. And he's going to go down as one of the best running backs ever. Honest to God, he's that good and just amazing talent. Number five is where I put Tebow and the whole drama. You know, I had a comment in here to mention you and your comment about you thought he wouldn't start because but you've already touched on it a little bit. But, you know, I remember it so distinctly. The news broke on the day of one of our shows. It was on a Wednesday, and we're sitting in here. And as we're doing the show, there was that little glimmer of hope, if you remember, that something screwed up with the contract or something. Mm-hmm. And we were like, maybe they didn't get him. I remember as a Jet fan being like, please let their ineptitude help us for once and let them not get it. And, you know, even as an optimistic Jet fan, you try to put a light spin on it, but it's been just an absolute mess. And it's obviously compelling.
And I remember you thinking, I remember you thinking that that the fans wouldn't turn on your boy Sanchez at any point.
Well, I said, but they didn't turn on him to go to Tebow. I've been to almost every home game. I just said that the thought was there were going to be people chanting Tebow's name for Sanchez, and that didn't happen.
The media certainly did.
What's that?
The media certainly did.
The media completely did, not the Jets fans. Tim Tebow, and I said it, my father came to the game against the Colts, and that was coming off a couple bad Sanchez games, and he lives in North Florida where Tebow still got. He was like, couldn't wait to see the reaction. I said, Dad, wait till you go on the stands. People hate Tim Tebow. And he still talks about it to this day. When I was down there for Thanksgiving, he was telling his friends in Florida, he goes, you go there. Tebow is like, he might as well be the enemy in the stands. And I knew that. The Jets fans were not going to buy into Tim Tebow. And they were not going to like him. Now, they don't like Mark Sanchez either. But when I was there against Arizona, when McElroy came into the game, and the place just erupted. Nobody that day was chanting for Tim Tebow. Not one person. They knew he wasn't dressed, but nobody was like, "Oh, I wish Tebow was in here because he would take over this game." People, Jets fans, are as crazy and as drunk as they are. They're smart football fans. They knew that Tim Tebow brought nothing to the table, and people were talking about Greg McElroy in Week 4 this year. Nobody was talking about. Not one legitimate Jet fan that I know legitimately told me they wanted Tim Tebow to play. And so, and I was right that they didn't work to sell any PSLs. They didn't sell any more. They probably lost PSLs because of that deal. I wrote the articles why I thought they did it, part ego, part just on a whim. They don't know what they're doing in the front office. But it was a drama that I'm glad will be over. Hopefully I don't mention Tim Tebow's name very many more times on the show. But number four, I went with the Cabrera Triple Crown. Again, I got into arguments with people on our Facebook page about, the Triple Crown and whether how meaningful it is. Well, you know what? I've been told all my whole life following baseball from the old timers. Nobody will ever have a Triple Crown again because all the specialized people that just hit home runs, nobody will ever do it again. Nobody will ever do it. And then when they do it, people now try to say, well, Triple Crown's not that big of a deal. Well, you've been talking to me about it since I was 5 years old. Now all of a sudden this guy does it. In the American League, where there's guys that just DH, just hit home runs, I think it's even more impressive in the American League than it is in the National League. And for him to go out and do it, and then people kind of poo-poo it, and people were talking about him not winning the MVP. I don't care what anybody says. And the people that I respect talk about the RBI is not an important number, and Mike Trout this. And Mike Trout was a great story. A guy goes out and wins the Triple Crown, a team that goes out and wins the AL. I'll tell you, that guy just carried a team when they were struggling in all aspects of the game. I don't know. Where do you put the Triple Crown, O? Do you not think it's an important thing?
I think it's important. I figured it would happen at some point. I actually figured a guy like Mike Trout was more likely to do it. The Triple Crown, and he did it, and people glossed over how hot he got at the end, power-wise, to really win that, because for a while it looked like he wasn't going to win home runs. He was clearly going to win batting average, but he needed to get super hot. I think he had a pretty serious September. I think someone needs to do the quadruple crown, and that's where Mike Trout has to step up. Someone's got to do the quadruple crown, lead in stolen bases or something like that.
Mike Trout's never going to lead the league in home runs. I don't think. He's got a lot of power.
It is. Someone needs to do the quadruple crown.
I guess that's where we stand now. We got to do a triple crown.
That's what it's
crown.
Become.
All right. Well, the number three, I went, here's my Olympic shout out here. I went with the U.S. women's gymnastics team. They got everybody to watch gymnastics. They got the president doing the Maroney smirk and all that. Gabby, what's the girl's last name? Gabby something or other. She was athlete of the year. It's just an amazing story. And it's like something always catches you, A few years ago it was curling, and everybody was into curling. This year I know people were like really into handball, but the women's gymnastics were just like the thing that everybody was into, and everybody now knew like how to score it and all that. And it was a really compelling story, and that's what makes the Olympics cool every year, is it's something different. So you kind of like, you didn't know you were going to be looking forward to it. Nobody went into the Olympics saying, I can't wait to watch women's gymnastics, but it swept, and everybody just wanted to talk about it. So it was a really cool story. Number two, I got A-Rod being benched in the playoffs. I think it was that compelling of a story how that went down, because we talked about it on the show a couple of days before it happened, and I laughed at it. Because these callers calling WFAN and ESPN Radio and wanting A-Rod to be benched for Eric Chavez, you're insane. It's Alex Rodriguez. I don't care what happened. And sure enough, he got benched, and it was crazy. It didn't work out for the Yankees because they looked horrible. And, now they're stuck with a guy making $30 million a year. They just benched, and what are they going to do with him? That's my number two. Number one, and a couple seconds left here, I got Liz Vanity. Nothing will ever, ever match those few weeks of how compelling that was. It was just insane how, like, every day, it was like Tebow Mania, but it was in New York, and it was when nothing else was going on. It was during the time when basketball was everything. The Liz Vanity little era, that little, month-long run, was like it was awesome, and I'm not even a Nick. I'm a Nick hater, but it was just like, this guy's unbelievable, and I don't know. That's where I put it. But thanks for joining. Anything on there that you disagreed with was not a compelling story? You got about 30 seconds.
No, I liked the Linsanity. It sure did make him a lot of money. It's good timing.
Made him a lot of money. He did all right yesterday on Christmas Day, too, but in 2011 or something like that. But, we're going to do our top 10 bowl predictions 2013 next week. I'd love to have you call back in and give us your thoughts. Appreciate you calling in. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. Next week, Neil will be back in studio. If you're listening via download, again, the phone number is 203-651-8741. Check us out on tristatesportsguys.com, our new site that Tony D's updated. It's been great. Check us out. Have a good new year, and we will see you next week.